the whole world was spread. You're born at the right time, yeah. You're born at the right time, you are. You're born at the right time, well. You're born at the right time, whoa.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. We are back at radio.dominican.edu. The Temple of Swan returns back from spring break. Temple, how was your spring break?
Spring break is always the best time of the year.
Oh, yeah.
Except for summer. When you get into summer, that's, of course, the best. But spring break is like the end goal is so close. You're so close to the end of a school year. And I just found out I have to take summer school for some classes to make up some units. So life's going good for me. Yeah, so it's a good spring break. Score. Scoreboard. But yeah, how was your spring break?
It was awesome, but I will we'll get into yours because I know you went to Disneyland.
Oh, so you're just throwing it back on me.
But I'll say my spring break was good. I saw my family for a night, which was nice to see them, and really just relaxed, got some work done, hung out, and enjoyed some nights in the city. I thought spring break overall was a good time, but I don't think it's going to top, what was it, 5 days in Disneyland?
Yeah.
The happiest place on earth?
Well, I mean, yours was pretty good, like you said. Your spring
break,
exactly.
Yeah,
it was fun for you. I definitely went to Disneyland, which is always a fun time, but it was hecka crowded there. It was like freaking the busiest I've ever seen it. Like line waits for like 100 minutes.
Oh geez.
And it's like, yeah, it was pretty crazy.
They still doing the fast passes there?
Yeah, that's the only way you could ride a ride now, is if you got a fast pass. Well, you could wait in line, but
the strategic
way. Who's gonna wait in line for an hour for Pirates of the Caribbean?
Yeah,
but you can't fast pass that ride anyway. But I'm just an example. That's, you gotta attack with fast passes. When's the last time you've been to Disneyland?
Oh man, definitely probably 4 or 5 years ago. And I remember, yeah, you have to attack with the fast pass. It's all about, okay, if we're going to ride this ride now, we got to get a fast pass before so we can hit this ride after this ride is now over.
It's a strategy.
But we can't miss this next ride because if this line is too long, it's just, yeah.
You got to map everything out.
So who'd you go with? The family and Arlena's family?
Yeah, my girlfriend's family and my family went because it was my mom's birthday. Celebrating.
Oh, right on.
Big birthday down in Disneyland, so yeah, we stayed there for a week, and it was pretty fun. It was 10 people all together, so it was a big
Whoa,
group.
Big trip.
Yeah.
Big hotel room? Or two?
We had multiple rooms.
Awesome.
Three rooms.
Oh, awesome.
But yeah, it was fun. Good times.
What's your favorite ride there?
That's a good question.
From Disneyland and California Adventure.
If we're combined, I mean, from Disneyland, I like Space Mountain.
Oh.
Space or Splash?
Oh, I can go both.
Yeah, so those are my two
from
there. And then from California, I like Tower of Terror.
Ooh.
Screaming's good too, but Tower of Terror beats Screaming by like an inch. How about you?
Yeah, I'm the exact same, dude.
You haven't gotten to ride the new Cars ride yet, have you?
No. How's that?
It's pretty fun. It's good. It's a good ride.
Is it kind of
the wait lines are incredibly long though, so you have to get to the park right when it opens and then fast pass it just wait till like 2 or 3, which is like when your time will be.
Are they still doing that submarine ride?
Yeah, it was closed down for refurbishment though. They changed it to Finding Nemo. I don't know if you.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was down right now because they're fixing it up for the summer crowd.
And then I'm going to stick with the Disneyland.
Okay.
What's the most underrated ride at Disneyland? Because you know how you could go into it's like a Buzz Lightyear ride and you kind of shoot the gun at the targets.
Oh, yeah. Have you played Toy Story Mania? That one's not.
No.
That one's not underrated because everyone knows about it now. But it's like Astro, but it's like
cool.
The Buzz Lightyear one, but it's 3D.
Oh
yeah, and it's pretty. Next time you go, you got to check that out for sure.
Okay, yeah. But, so that's what I was thinking.
But if we're going under the radar,
yeah,
like something you'd never think of.
Yeah,
I'd have to go Interventions. It's not really a ride, but that's a hidden gem in Disneyland.
I don't believe I'm familiar. Interventions?
Yeah, it's like all this technology stuff, and it's in the you know where Space Mountain is.
Okay,
that thing right straight ahead from it. Like, say you're walking into Space Mountain, you go to the left.
Okay.
That little huge thing. That little huge. If that makes sense
cool,
to you.
Cool.
But yeah. There's no wait for that. It's got air conditioning inside.
Oh, yeah.
Hidden gem.
Was it pretty hot?
Yeah.
In L.A.?
Yeah, it was pretty hot. It was pretty warm. It was like 80s, but it was like humid a little bit, so it was a little sticky.
Are you the big park goers is get there early in the morning and stay there for a while throughout the day? And
yeah, I try to get there early. I used to get there early a lot more, but my girlfriend likes to sleep in. So,
no shame.
Yes, she's like you.
Yeah.
You like to sleep. You value your sleep.
Temple's coming in the apartment and I'm knocked out in the morning.
But we stay once we go, like say we'll go at like 11, we'll stay there the whole day usually.
Perfect.
Try to knock out everything.
Oh man, right on.
That's some spring break talk for
All
me.
Right. Let's get down and dirty with it.
That's a good saying. Let's get down and dirty with it. Because we're not a spring break talk show. We are a sports talk show. I feel like we owe our listeners some
a
little bit of sports talk. And then we can go back to these beautiful vacation talk. First off, let's talk some football. Since free agency has gotten underway, we're about a week and a half through free agency. Teams are making moves. The Patriots and Broncos are flexing
their muscle. My goodness, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Just for a quick minute or two, the rich seem to be getting richer.
They're capitalizing on the fact that their quarterbacks may have 1 or 2 years left in the tank, and they're spending all their money, and they are definitely getting better.
Exactly. So we had the Broncos re-up on defense. That was their main concern.
Yeah, they got Ware, Revis. No, not Revis. Revis went to the Patriots. But
Tlaib.
They got, Ware, Tlaib.
In the safety. Ward.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And so those are three huge pieces for Denver. And they lost Decker, but I don't think that's going
to hurt them as much. He leave to the Jets? That was a horrible decision.
It really just comes down to money is everything. I don't know why, because he's not going to win there.
You want Geno throwing to you?
Yeah, Geno. I don't know how good Geno's going to pan out. If he doesn't pan out, it's back to good old Mark throwing to Decker. I thought when you're an NFL athlete, you definitely want to win. And Decker was making a good amount of coin. He would have made great money re-signing with Denver, too. Not as much as in New York. But, yeah, I agree with you. I don't know. And then hop over to the Patriots. They go out and get Revis to replace Tlaib.
Yeah.
You think Revis has still got some gas left in the tank?
He's had a bad couple of years ever since he left Revis Island and the Jets. He's really struggled. He did not fit with the Buccaneers. They paid him way too much money, and he was hurt for most of the season. So, really, he's looking for a bounce back year, and he's in a perfect format. He's going to a winning team with Belichick, who seems to pan out with everyone. Like, Randy Moss sent him to Belichick, and it'll work out for some reason.
Even Tlaib.
Yeah.
Tlaib was down, and now he's one of the great corners.
Yeah, and he got paid for that great year he had last year. So, I think Revis will have a good year, and that was definitely a good pickup by the Patriots. And like we said, the Patriots and Broncos just getting stronger, even though they were two of the strongest teams in the NFL already.
And then they signed Browner.
Oh, yeah, Brandon Browner.
The substance abuse corner from Seattle, who's really good. I'm going to throw that out there because
he's suspended 4 games.
Yeah, but still, you get him. Those are two good corners, big physical corners. And then now the talk, maybe they add DeSean Jackson. What do you do? So if they add DeSean, you have Edelman, Dobson, DeSean? I feel like I'm missing one guy.
You are. I can't think of his name, though.
Besides Gronk, it's 85.
Yeah. What's his?
Kembrell Tompkins?
Yeah, Tompkins. That's who it is, okay. Yeah.
Gotcha. If they add DeSean, that's a lot of speed to stretch the field with a healthy Ridley to start the season.
And Brady's proven that he could throw to anyone. So no, if you add a great receiver like DeSean Jackson, and they're only talking about maybe a third-round draft pick and then taking on his contract, that's not too much to ask for the Patriots, I don't think, at all. Then you give Brady DeSean Jackson an elite deep threat. That could be dangerous for their offense.
Oh, yeah.
I hope that doesn't happen.
Those are the two heavyweights.
Yeah, we heard that the Niners were in talks. I mean, what's your feelings on that, for that the Niners talking about trading for DeSean Jackson?
I love it. I'm not sure where the Niners are at affording him wise, because if they want more than a third-round pick, I don't know how much the Niners are willing to give up and taking on his contract. But that seems to be the theme for the Niners. They couldn't afford Terrell Brown as he skipped town across Bay. I like that pickup by the Raiders. He got some good guaranteed money there. They cut Rodgers to try to fill open space, and then once Whitner left for Cleveland, they go out and get Bethea. And so I don't know how much room they have. They bring back Bruce Miller today. They've re-signed Dawson. And another talk is about how much money is cap. They're going
to
get cap.
They're going to have to get ready for cap next year.
And I don't know. DeSean, I feel, would be a huge, huge valuable asset. I just don't know if they can afford him. I'd love to have him.
Yeah, if you could put Jackson on the outside, and then you have Bolden as a nice possession receiver just moving the chains, that'd be a lethal combo for cap.
Oh, yeah.
But like you said, I think that they're getting ready to pay Kaepernick next offseason. Yeah. So they got to save as much money as possible. And so that could be one of the reasons why they're not aggressively going after DeSean Jackson, even though they're in talks to being the teams that are interested. But we've heard that the Patriots have emerged themselves as the leader in the clubhouse in regards to that trade.
It seems like whenever you're going up against the Patriots in talks of a player going to a team, they just seem to come out on top.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, but who knows? It's still up in the air. Hopefully DeSean lands in the Bay. We'll see, though.
Yeah, he's from Cal.
That would be.
So come back to the Bay.
Yeah.
That's got to be worth something.
Skipping over to the Raiders, though, they've made some nice moves, a lot more than the Niners.
That's because they've had way more money.
Which is
they had to make moves.
I feel like they've been making some good moves. First off, do you think they're making good moves?
Yeah.
And who's a couple of guys or one guy that's been the best acquisition?
Yeah, I've heard some mixed reviews about the Raiders, and I also feel like kind of average that the moves that they made. They had the most money, over $60 million coming into this offseason, so you knew that they were going to get a heavy amount of players because they had the money to do that kind of thing. So we were expecting them to be buyers this offseason. And the one thing that I don't like about this offseason is they had the money to pay their young stars who are already in Oakland. They had Valdir and they had Houston, but they offered to let them go. And really, in return, what they got are older players who are not in their prime anymore. So you bring in for Lamar Houston, who is one of our best linemen last year, which isn't saying too much as the Raiders didn't have a great D-line, but he was one of the real stick-out players. And then coming in now, you have Justin Tuck, who's older, Lamar Woodley, who's a little older, Antonio Smith, guys who are good and who have been to the Pro Bowl before, but they're declining and they're really old in age. So, yeah, you're hoping that these guys can really bring veteran leadership to your team and to the Raiders, who are relatively young.
I mean, can they help them now?
So, yeah, in that aspect, I think that they can help now, but you're losing the prime of what you had going. You had Valdir and you had Houston, two of your best players on the team, and you don't want to pay them when you have the most money in the NFL. It's kind of confusing to me. And you bring in
and you bring in
older players who are a little bit more injury prone. I mean, that's a risk that you're playing with right now. When you get older, more of a risk for injury. So you bring in Tuck, Woodley, and Smith. I like the moves on the line there to bring pass rushers in because we didn't really have one last year. So, but, I mean, it's just you're sacrificing our youth for getting older right now. I mean, that's why it's average. You know, you brought in good older players, good veterans. Like Justin Tuck, 2 years at $11 million isn't bad. He was probably the best pass rusher for the Giants when they won the two Super Bowls. So very good pass rusher. Then Lamar Woodley from the Steelers, very good linebacker who can get to the quarterback. And then Antonio Smith, defensive end from the Texans. He kind of didn't play as good last year, but he had good years two years before last. He was really good, so they're hoping he returns back to that. But, I mean, it's a risk either way because they went a little bit older than what I would have liked.
What do you think about the offensive line?
Yeah, the whole Saffold thing that happened, because Saffold was coming in to replace Valdir. That was what McKenzie wanted. But first off, they were going to overpay him, give him way too much money for...
What was that, 5 years for?
Yeah, I think it was like 40.
40 mil?
Yeah, or it was either 40 or 50 million. It was way overpaid. Valdir got to the Cardinals on a cheaper deal, and I think Valdir is a better player. Saffold was injured a lot last season and the year before, so you know he's an injury risk. He comes in, he signs, has to take a physical, and he ended up failing the physical in quotation marks because then the day after the Rams signed him and passed him for a physical. So I think that the Raiders, Mark Davis in particularly, didn't like this deal.
Smart move.
And I think he overstepped Reggie McKenzie and said, this can't happen. We got to fail him on the physical so we don't take on that. That's a huge contract that for a guy who might play guard. He wasn't even going to be slated to play tackle. And that's a lot of money to give a guard. Yeah. So that was a horrible start to free agency. Everyone just keeps making fun of the Raiders. That was the first move that they wanted to make, and it was just didn't fall through, thankfully, I think, for the Raiders. And instead, now they have Austin Howard, who comes in to play tackle. He's a veteran from the Jets. And they just brought in Donald Penn as well from the Buccaneers. Both are veterans.
I do like Penn.
Yeah, I do like Penn. That was a good signing. And he's hopefully, I cross my fingers, he's been consistent and not missing games. So that's what the Raiders need is consistency on the O-line along with Wisniewski, maybe Malik Watson, guys they already have. And you bring in guys like Booth, Penn, and Howard. That's three good guys that you're bringing in, hopefully to solidify a offensive line that you can get for 16 games. That's what I think the Raiders are hoping for. They're building through the lines because they haven't made any acquisitions at quarterback, which they still need to do, or really anything at cornerback other than Terrell Brown. I mean, they still need to do that stuff, but they're really trying to build through the lines first.
And that's what I want to get to. You just touched on moving forward. Who do they look for here in this upcoming draft? Do they go quarterback? We've talked about this off the mic, how it's a little bit risky to go quarterback because there's so many good position players out there that they can get for great value. But can Pryor or McGloin carry this offense? Where, if you were sitting in the driver's seat, who would you want?
All right, if I'm Reggie McKenzie, right? Yeah, if I'm Reggie McKenzie, I'm definitely not drafting a quarterback first round.
Some projections are saying Bridgewater.
Yeah, I've heard Bridgewater, and I've heard Manziel if he falls. I definitely don't want Bridgewater, especially from what we've seen from his pro day. He's not the quarterback that's going to step in right away, which is what the Raiders need, a quarterback right away. So if you're drafting...
How about Manziel?
If you're drafting a quarterback at number five, you're assuming that with the Raiders' position right now that he's going to step in and be the day one starter. You're assuming that he's better than Pryor. You're assuming he's better than McGloin. So that means he's going to start because that would mean they're not going to bring in a veteran presence. So if you're drafting a quarterback at five, he has to be the surefire starter. And I don't think any guy in this draft is from day one a starter for the Raiders. I think there's better options with the veterans that are on the market or about to be on the market with teams letting them go. In regards to Manziel, he's so risky. I mean, he's high risk, high reward. You pick him at five, and he's going to start, like I said. And if he doesn't get going after the first couple of games with a line that's rather new, they haven't played together yet, so it'd be tough for any quarterback to come into that. You see that with rookies a lot. When they start and they get thrown in the fire like Smith, like other quarterbacks who just get drafted early and get thrown into the game, like at week one, they struggle. Like EJ Manuel, I mean, you can't expect...
Whedon.
You can't expect a rookie to come in and just ball right away. I mean, there's guys like Luck and like RG3 who can do it, but those were guys who they knew.
They were
from the draft. They were 1-2. Everyone knew that those two guys were going 1-2 because they were surefire prospects. These guys in the draft this year, I don't see any of them as being go-to guys early on in the draft.
I agree.
Someone you might pick up second round and then hope that they pan out after resting. I mean, after not resting because they're not resting, but after sitting behind a veteran like Rodgers did with Favre.
Being mentored, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you got to do. So if McKenzie is smart, he won't draft a quarterback with the fifth pick. He should. What I envision is trading for a guy like Schaub or even Sanchez. Both have been rumored to being in the process of being shopped around to other teams because their contracts and they're really just played their last games and their jerseys because of whether it be Smith or Schaub throwing too many picks in Houston, just really not fan favorites anymore. So they're on their way out. If you trade for those guys, they're going to come relatively cheap, maybe a sixth round draft pick. I mean, that's not too much to ask for. The Raiders have all their picks this year. And then you're bringing in a guy who's going to start from day one, and it's a veteran. Then you can draft that quarterback in round two or three, like David Fales, David Carr, maybe if he falls, or Mettenberger. Guys who have the potential to be good quarterbacks but aren't seen as that first-round draft pick. That's where I think the value is, if you let those quarterbacks fall and then sit under a veteran.
That's the way to go. I'd say go after Schaub. Give out a low round draft pick, like you said, a fifth or sixth round. Schaub had one really bad year. He's really, I'd say, an average quarterback, if not above average.
Yeah, he was a Pro Bowl quarterback 2 years ago.
And so you can go after him because he got ran out of Houston. And then say you go after a position skilled player, as in Watkins or maybe an Anthony Barr, or I'm not even going to say Clowney because I don't think he'll fall
that far. If he does fall, they better take Clowney. If he falls to five.
Or someone of that nature who's very good at a skilled position that the Raiders could use either offensively or defensively.
And the good thing about the Raiders is they can use help anywhere.
Yeah.
So really, you're going to take the best player available. If they, like, there's no way the Raiders can fail this first round pick. Let me rephrase this. The only way they can fail in their first round pick at number five is if they take a quarterback. That's, in my mind, that's the only way they'll fail this draft. They could take Mac. They
I don't
could
think take they'll take a quarterback.
Yeah, I hope not. They could take Mac, Khalil Mack from Buffalo. They could take Anthony Barr from UCLA. They could take Clowney if he falls. They could take Watkins. All those guys, in my eyes, would be great picks for number five.
And that's their value. I think that these quarterbacks are, they're overvalued.
Yeah. You don't want to rush a quarterback. Like, why pick a quarterback at number five if he's not the best player? There's no sense in that. You can get a veteran who's, like, let's be real. The Raiders aren't going to probably go to the Super Bowl next year. So why would you even think that way? You need to build around the quarterback, yes, but you need to get other positions first. We can't focus on getting Bridgewater at number five and then, wow, he's going to be horrible like Jamarcus Russell, and then we're going to be reset 6 years. You see how long we've had to recover from a Jamarcus Russell draft pick.
Yeah, a big, especially early, a reach at a quarterback sets you back if it doesn't pan out.
It does.
And especially with the QBs you just talked about on the market right now, why not go get an established one that's played in the year, in the league for 4 or 5 years and then build around him? Get a rejuvenation.
Yeah, I would take any quarterback that, like, Freeman, Vic, Sanchez, Schaub, like we've talked about. Schaub's my leading guy in the race for quarterback. But any of those guys.
That'd be a really good fit.
Yeah, any of those guys I would take. Like, Schaub's been linked with our offensive coordinator, Greg Knapp. He was a quarterback coach in Houston. So those two already get along together. I feel just that's the way to go. Hopefully they pull the trigger on that. I've only heard rumors. But yeah, this draft is important for the Raiders. This is their first year of their actual positive rebuilding. We've already broken down the house and broken down everyone in our organization. So now is the time to come up and build around a good team with actual money to spend. So hopefully that keeps going.
I agree. And I think the Raiders are on the upside. They kept everyone around. They even kept McFadden, which was a little surprise. They lost Jennings. I didn't know if that's going to sting at all, if McFadden can stay healthy, which we talk about every time we bring up the Raiders previously in our show on the Temple of Swamp. But I like what they have going, and I think this draft is really, really crucial for them, especially for, as in yourself, this, your season ticket holders. You guys are ready
to
at least get above the hump to where you're down into week 10, 11, and 12, thinking about the playoffs, at least thinking about a spot.
They can't draft guys like Watson or Hayden this year. They've got to hit home runs on their first two picks, first three picks, that is. They've got to hit guys who they can come into the lineup right away and make an impact.
You can do it. You can find them.
This has got to be a huge draft for the Raiders. I agree with that. You're listening to the Temple of Swan at radio.dominican.edu. When we come back, we'll talk a little baseball, a little A's. I want to say a little A's scariness coming out of spring training camp with only a week left till games. So we'll talk about that. And then at 6, we do have an interview with Miles Correa, the star point guard for Dominican basketball. He's a senior, so we're going to see what he's doing, if he wants to go overseas and play like many other guys, or what his plans are after graduation. So stay tuned at radio.dominican.edu. This is Mike Temple and Alex Swan. Give this heart a break. I don't want to make the same.
I wanna reach in and pull it out. And I'd be lying if I didn't say, when you're this close, I'm afraid. The way I feel if I touch your hand, the way I miss you when you're not there, and that I'll see you when I close my eyes. It's too late, I've crossed that line. And it aches, it breaks, it takes your breath away. I'll still be around, come closing time. I don't wanna fall in love with you. I try, but I can't get around the truth. Please don't say my name, give this heart a break. I don't wanna. keeps gonna walk you home now.
Save me,
Welcome back to the Temple of Swan at radio.dominican.edu. Mike Temple and Alex Swan back from our spring break layover there of 1 week. A little rusty, but we're trying to shake it off here. And like we said, we do have Miles Carrillo coming on at 6. He was the point guard for the men's basketball team who got shafted from an NCAA tournament bid, in my opinion. I know you.
Can we go into that real quick? Let's give the audience a little scenario of what happened.
Yeah, you can start that off for us. Okay. I'll chip in if I need to
give you
some details.
Definitely. Add in because you were watching the championship live from the video feed. Way to score that. But so PacWest Conference Tournament, it comes down to the first opening round. Dixie State is taking on a Hawaii Pacific team, and it's coming down to Dominican and Dixie State for this at-large bid.
Yeah, the last at-large, but you get 8 teams in the NC2A tournament from the West region. And it was looking like it was going to be either Dixie or Dominican for the last at-large.
And those were the two. And before we even get into the conference tournament, Dominican had beaten Dixie State twice in the regular season, at home and on the road. Edge Dominican, right? Well, they go into the conference tournament. Dixie State loses in the opening round to Hawaii Pacific.
The 6th-seeded Hawaii Pacific, who's barely over 500.
And they go down. They're out of the tournament. Hawaii Pacific moves on to play DU because they had the bye from earning the 2nd seed. They're the 2nd seed in the tourney. Dixie State was the 3 seed. They're out. Hawaii Pacific plays Dominican. Dominican beats them to
win
the championship.
Handedly, too. Handedly.
Yes. Double digits, correct?
Yes.
And they're going to play Chaminade. In the championship game, point blank, Chaminade caught fire. One guy had 9 threes. Another guy had 5.
He was 9 for 11, I think, from 3-point range.
That's unconscious.
Yeah,
we've been watching the tourney throughout the day. March Madness just kicked off, and you were not seeing 9 triples by one guy. Maybe 4 at the most. But Chaminade caught fire. They ended up beating Dominican. Great run for DU. They make it to the conference championship game. That should be enough. Clearly, they've beaten Dixie State twice. Dixie State got eliminated before the Penguins in the PacWest Conference Tournament. And yet, the committee comes down and decides, Dixie State, you're getting in to the NCAA Tournament for Division II basketball. And by the way, they're one and done. They lose in the opening round.
All the PacWest teams lost. Like, Chaminade actually almost had the only winner as they were the 8 seed because they won the tournament and got that automatic bid, but they were seen as the weakest team in the group, and they hung with the number 1 seed and only lost by, I think, 2. It was. And then the other 2 bids were Cal Baptist, who was slumping towards the end of the season. They lost. And then Dixie State also lost. Should have been Dominican in their place. Could have been a different story.
If you just there's analysts all the time when it comes down to March for the Division I NCAA tournament. They compare the team's resumes. They call them resumes about key wins, key losses, strength of schedule, how many wins, meaningful wins compared to another team. And we did that tournament resume comparison. And Dominican had the better tournament resume. And when it comes down to you beating a team twice and you don't get in, I don't understand that at all. And I love a reasoning. I'm not going to get one.
Yeah,
but I don't know what happened and what was the discussion in that committee room.
Yeah, that's the thing. They beat Dixie twice. They ended up getting a higher seed through the regular season. They got the 2. Dixie got the 3. And then Dixie loses in the first round. Dominican loses in the championship. Again, beating Dixie, if we're comparing teams head-to-head. And somehow Dixie gets chosen. I don't know if it's because they're a bigger school. That sometimes could happen. It was just, in my opinion, and I think yours as well, Dominican got shafted.
Big time.
And didn't get a chance to play in the NC2A tournament, which is a horrible ending to what was a great season, 22-8 overall.
Yeah, they were deserving of a tournament bid. I'm a little disappointed that they couldn't at least get a shot in the field. And we're going to get Miles Carrillo's take on that. I'd like to ask him what he's thinking, and if, I don't know if he got an explanation of why they didn't get in, or if they told Coach Booker T. Harris, or
they gave some kind of explanation. Because that's, to me, is just a bafflement. Is that a word? Befuddlement.
We can make it a word.
But a bafflement.
Bafflement.
That could be.
Describes the situation perfectly.
Michael's word of the day is bafflement, and I used it. Okay.
Bafflement for 30.
Moving on, we are going, like we said, we're going to talk about some A's baseball as.
Oh, man.
They took some hard news this week.
This is big news.
The injury bug has already bitten the Oakland Athletics in Cactus League play. Jared Parker, who is slotted to be their opening day starter, is required to have his second Tommy John surgery, and he'll be out for the rest of the season. And then if you want to move on, we'll talk about that more in depth, but I want to get to the rest of the injuries. Scott Kazmir, who is supposed to be the three, now is going to be the two starter, has been scratched multiple times due to back stiffness and arm stiffness. Not good, but they're calling it minor, so hopefully it is minor. And then you have AJ Griffin, who's the four starter for the A's. He's going through what Jared Parker was going through before they diagnosed him with Tommy John, and as an elbow tendonitis. Again, the A's are calling it minor, but elbow tendonitis is what Jared Parker had. And then you see 2 weeks later, he has to have Tommy John. So that could be something on the horizon, which would really derail what I think was a potential great season for the A's.
It really shocked me. I got an update and on my phone, and it said Jared Parker has elbow stiffness, elbow tendonitis. I was like, oh, man, well, hopefully he can make it for the opening series, or if he's got to miss maybe a week or two, and he'll be back. But then you get another update that says he's going to miss the remainder of the season with Tommy John. It really shocked me.
And yeah, it's his second one. It's that in the success rate of a second Tommy John surgery is already low in pitchers, but it's even lower in starters. Only one starter has come back and had decent success with two Tommy John surgeries. So it's going to be a huge task for Parker, who is relatively young at least. That's the one thing he's got going for him, to come back from a second Tommy John surgery. And nothing's set in stone. It's not for certain that he's going to come back and deal the next year. I mean, that's what makes this injury so tough.
Can?
I mean, he's young, like I said, so hopefully that's what he's got working for him. But it just doesn't – maybe 2 or 3 years from now he might start to come back to form. But Jared Parker was becoming an ace.
I know.
That's the thing that hurts the most, is that the A's lose their ace. And, yeah, they had pitching depth. In the offseason, they required depth with starters. They got 7 or 8 starters. Now they're down to 5. They're down to and that's what hurts the most. They're going to have to call up guys from AAA. They're going to ask more of their bullpen. It really just makes the team weaker with that injury, like any injury would. So if the Giants lost Bumgarner, they'd be in the same thing. You can't lose an ace.
Yeah, you can't. And it's going to affect them a little bit, but somehow the A's just find ways to maneuver around injuries or doubt, and they get it done. I'm hoping that they can still put together a heck of a run this season.
Now you're going to have to rely on Sonny Gray, who's only came up for half of last year. Now he's going to be the ace for the A's. Then you're going to have Kazmir at the 2. Hopefully he stays healthy. Then you're looking at Straley at the 3, and then the 4 or 5 still up. You're going to have Jesse Chavez. Looks like he's going to go into either the 4 or 5 spot. He was a long man for the A's the last 2 seasons. Very good at that spot. Now he's going to be thrown into that starting rotation. They're going to ask for him to go 5-6 innings every 5 days. That's a big task for what was a long man.
That's a big leap. But I'll compare it to Chad Godin of the Giants last year. He did an excellent job. Long relief man comes in, starts throwing some nice gas. Got himself hurt, though. His arm tired out. So I think Chavez can get it done. Maybe 5-6 innings is all you need. And the only big backbone the A's can lean on is they got the great bullpen.
Yeah, they're going to have to use that great bullpen.
They will.
The whole season.
They got to all stay healthy.
They're going to rely on that bullpen game after game now because of the lack of starting depth. And what I want to say is eliteness, I guess you can say, because they're only... I mean, your ace now on paper is Sonny Gray, a guy who pitched half a season last year. He had two postseason games, but that's your ace of the staff. And then you're going with Kazmir, who had a huge bounce back year, but he's nothing. He's not. I'm not going to call him reliable, a reliable starter. Yeah. So a lot of ifs about the A's, and it's just hard to see 1 week before the season, as they're almost getting ready to take on the Giants in the Bay Bridge series before the season, the annual Bay Bridge series. I mean, it's a tough way to go into the season. I wonder what the players' morale is around the organization, getting that kind of information that your ace has gone down with season-ending Tommy John surgery. But like you said, the A's have found a way to rally against all odds. They did it last year, they did it the year before, so that is the one thing that they have going for them. And hopefully it stays true.
How do you find a way to rally as a team when you hear your ace goes down? How do you get back in the zone, especially so close to opening day?
Yeah, that's got to be hard. I don't know. I haven't had to deal with that because I haven't been a major league player. Yeah, and hard. I haven't had too many guys go through Tommy John. But, I mean, to envision it, I feel like just going off the last 2 years when the A's have won the AL West, they've been a team that really hasn't cared about last game's results or any injuries. They've gone through injury bugs the last 2 years, but they've been able to get guys to come up from AAA out of nowhere, like Eric Sogard, Seth Smith will step up. It's like guys like that, just unsung heroes who will help the A's out. That's the one good thing about the A's, is they don't rely on one player. They don't rely on Cespedes to get the job done. Cespedes had a horrible year last year, but the A's were still successful. Brandon Moss steps up. He goes plays outfield when Reddick gets hurt. Just guys fill in where they're needed. So that's the one good thing about the A's, and I think that's how they'll rally around a horrible loss like this to Parker, is that they know that they have guys coming from AAA that can do the job, and they have faith in the organization that really on any given day one guy will step up.
I think that's a big thing. They got faith and trust in the organization. When you have that, you got heart, you can still fight off a tough injury and make a deep run.
And that's what the A's are hoping to do. And then going over to the other side of the bay with the Giants, no real injury news yet. One thing I do want to talk about is Timmy Lincecum. He's throwing pretty well in spring training, which is a good sign for the Giants. In fact, their whole starting rotation is throwing pretty well.
They have been.
So if they can carry that on to a regular season when it actually matters, the Giants are going to be dangerous. If they can get Bumgarner, Kane, Lincecum, Vogelsong all on the same page, pitching well, and Hudson. I forgot about Hudson. All those guys.
You have to have all of them click. Because the hitting is, you know, Giants hitting is always going to be suspect at times. They got a nice lineup, but it's just never something they rely on. So the pitching's always going to have to be something that's going to be vital, because also the bullpen is nowhere near what it's been when they've made their deep World Series run. So like you said, if they can all click, that's big. And it's nice to see Timmy finding his stuff in spring training. But it kind of reminds me of Brandon Belt sometimes, when he would absolutely tear it up in spring training and then just tank.
Yeah.
So I love seeing players do well in spring training, but you're right. It all comes down to how much you can carry it over into the regular season.
And that's the one thing that matters the most. How well can these players from both the A's and Giants carry their hot numbers from the spring into the regular season? The spring is meant to get your game in shape and really form your technique. Like last year, I remember Eric Sogard, I think he hit like 500 in spring training, and that's why he made the roster. So it's good for guys like that. But then when you put him in the season, he bats 230, couple RB. I mean, it's a totally different game from spring to the regular season.
It's a whole new approach for how pitchers attack hitters. Hitters see a lot more cheese in spring training than the regular season, which that's normal. That's what spring training is for. And it's a good sign. We'll see what happens. I'm stoked. Opening day, Saturday. And
Down in Australia.
As, by the way, Temple and I put together a fantasy baseball team we'll be monitoring. That'll be pretty fun.
Add to a combo, because I don't trust myself in fantasy baseball.
Hey, it's a long
managerial
season too.
Decisions.
But I think that'll be pretty fun. But only thing I'm worried a little bit about is Scudero. He's 50-50. He had his epidural shot and in his back, and so he's 50-50 for opening day. If he can stay, I don't know, get him 120 games, I think maybe, I don't know, around that ballpark, they'd be okay. But they don't have. They got Arias as kind of the utility man. But if Scudero goes down again, I feel he's a big piece.
Yeah, him and Pagan, I think together.
Oh yeah, good call.
Him and Pagan are huge. They need to have injury-free seasons. Like you said, 120 games is a pretty good amount for both those guys to be up top of the order. Because when the Giants won the World Series, it was Pagan and Scudero.
Exactly.
Doing work up top. And then Sandoval would occasionally knock him in. Buster Posey would get key two-out hits to really knock those guys in. But those are the table setters right there in Pagan and Scudero. So I really do like that point. If they could stay healthy, there's no telling what the Giants lineup could do. They could be effective.
Yeah, and they can compete with the Dodgers, even though the Dodgers they've re-upped on their starting rotation as well, grabbing Dan Heron for free agency. But we talked about the top of the lineup for the Giants. Top of the lineup was also key for the A's last year. Coco, Donaldson, Cespedes. Do they repeat and have the same success, you think? Or do you think there's new guys stepping into the new roles?
Yeah, the thing about the A's is they have so many different lineups. It's really hard to, like you said, Donaldson was at the top some games. Then he bat four.
Yeah.
Then he bat six. It's so hard to predict the A's lineups because they run on just simply matchups and platooning.
I kind of like that.
Yeah.
With Melvin.
He loves to do that. If there's a lefty pitcher, you're going to see almost all righties. And then you're going to have all your lefties coming on the bench when they bring in the righty reliever. So that's the way the A's like to operate. So, I mean, yeah, it's hard to predict the top of their order, but I expect them to do the same thing. Coco Crisp was the one mainstay in that lineup. He was the one guy you knew who'd be penciled in at the leadoff spot. And I've heard it on broadcast on Comcast Sportsnet said all the time. Coco Crisp is the engine to the A's. When he's playing well, the A's are playing well. Coco Crisp had a monster year last year. Power numbers were up. RBI numbers were up. Stolen bases were a little bit down. But
The way he was cranking them, that was fine.
Yeah, he was getting on base, and he was also hitting home runs. He was doing all that from the leadoff spot. And when Coco goes, the A's go. So if Coco has a great year, then I expect the A's to have a great year. There should be no letoff in that. I expect Brandon Moss to have another good year. Hopefully hit for some more average. And then I talked about, I think, was it last week or 2 weeks ago? Derek Norris, I think, is the hidden gem in this lineup. He's going to be the everyday catcher, I hope, for the A's. He's having a monster spring. I've heard a lot of rave reviews about the way he's changed his approach. And I think this being his third year in the majors, it's a huge year for him to really break out and show what he can do in the box. And I think he will, which will help the bottom half of the order.
I agree. You think they go less platoon if Norris breaks out?
Yeah, I think at the catcher position, you go less platoon. I don't know. I'm still in the air as whether or not the A's will carry three catchers on the roster or two.
Do you like him carrying three, or you prefer two?
I prefer two because...
Me too.
The only thing about that is that Jaso had that huge concussion that kept him out half of the season.
That was nasty.
Towards the end, yeah. So if he could catch every 3 days, then yeah, we only go two catchers. But then you have a good second-year catcher and vote to bring up in AAA if anything happens. But I like Norris being the everyday catcher than using Jaso at the DH slot because Jaso's a really good hitter. He gets on base a lot. He'll take walks. Perfect batter for the A's, really what they try to do and what their approach is. So if Jaso can stay healthy, then I like just carrying two catches and using Norris as an everyday guy behind the plate because I think he's going to have that good of a year.
Should be solid. I agree with everything you just said, but should we talk a little bit about the tourney?
I think it's a national holiday.
Before Carrillo hops
in
here?
it's only natural that we talk about basketball before he gets in here. We got to get warmed up.
I agree.
That's the way I think of it. Right now we're watching St. Joe's versus UConn while also doing a radio show. We're that talented, and that's how much
you can't get enough
exactly.
Of the tourney, man.
That's how much March Madness can take over your life. And I mean, it's the first couple of rounds are always so interesting because there's always a game on. There's always multiple games on. Like right after this game, there'll be one that's going down to the 2-minute stretch, and we can go watch that game. That's the good thing about the first couple of rounds.
Dude, that's my favorite part of the tourney, is the first couple of rounds. And, you know, I feel everyone brings their laptop, their tablet, or their phone to class around tournament time, and you can just see kind of everyone staring at their screens while the professor's lecturing because, you know, everyone's just
watching. We would never do that.
Oh, of course not. Never. But it's awesome, man. I think everyone loves it. It's gotten deep. All these offices get their office pool together. I mean, and you, for example, Mike's girlfriend Arlena was perfect 7 for 7 early on.
And she hasn't watched a game of college basketball.
And that's just great. That's the great part about it.
Exactly. That's the good thing about the tournament is really you don't have to have any knowledge of what these teams have done throughout the season because it's so crazy that
exactly. You just pick them.
Exactly. You just pick them. And upsets will eventually happen. I got upset heavy in this tournament, what I saw happening. So
that's okay. I think
it comes
you're
out.
Dialed.
It was like, oh, I made a good Dayton pick, but then, oh, I blew it on Syracuse. They got whooped by 20. So, I mean, it goes up and down. The interesting thing about the tournament is you get to see all these teams you never even heard of, like North Dakota State, the Bison. I mean, then you get to watch Dayton play. You never get to see them on a ESPN network. Just all these teams that you can see going against the Giants like Oklahoma, going against Ohio State and beating them. It's really just fun to watch. And then we didn't even talk about Harvard taking down Cincinnati. Harvard does it once again at Ivy League gurus.
I love it because they're college athletes. They're around our age. You see all the passion and the emotion come out around this time because this is it. They're one and done. And it doesn't matter how good you are on paper, how good of a conference you're in. These quote-unquote mid-major schools come to play. And that's where we see the upsets every year.
And the one thing I noticed about watching Harvard, which is the case for many mid-major teams, is that they play the game with such intelligence. They're so smart and so efficient, both on offensive and defensive sides. You won't see dumb fouls from Harvard. You won't
Not
see silly turnovers from them. They take care of the ball. They value every possession. And that's why these teams like Harvard are so dangerous in the tournament. Because Cincinnati saw it today. If you're not going to make layups, Harvard's going to make you pay for it on the other side.
Oh, I know. And it's great to see these smaller schools. They don't have the NBA superstar. They're all team effort. Five guys
This
one great NBA star, and they just gang him. And that team usually comes out
with
a couple good, really, really good players for another big school.
Yeah, Cincinnati has Kilpatrick, one of the best scorers in college basketball. And then you have Harvard, who really no one knows anyone on this roster, but the guys play with such heart and determination that those five guys overtake Kilpatrick and the rest of Cincinnati by a landslide. And Harvard was ahead for virtually that whole game. And they really made Cincinnati look silly, and they ended up winning in the first round again like they did last year against New Mexico. They're always a sleeper Cinderella, if you want to call them. I don't know how deep you have them going. Do you have them winning the next round? Because I know you picked the Harvard upset, but do you have them?
No, not against Michigan State. If they weren't playing Michigan State, I would take them, but I had them against Cincinnati.
Yeah, Michigan State is, I think, both of our favorites to get to the final. Do you have them going to the Final Four? I don't want to just...
I do.
Yeah, I have them going to the Final Four as well.
I think so many people do. It makes me think, is that a jinx? Is that too much pressure? But then you look at the coach and you think there's never too much pressure for Tom Izzo.
Ever since they got healthy, the Spartans from Michigan State have been dangerous. Adrian Payne had 40-plus points today.
Oh, my.
I mean, they're a dangerous team when healthy, and right now they're healthy, and they're clicking on all cylinders. Same with Louisville, a team that won it last year. So you don't like the odds of them repeating as champions again. Cause
is that your winner?
I picked Louisville as the winner.
They could do it, man. They got that Florida Gator repeat mentality, especially with their coach, Rick Pitino, all over again.
Yeah.
And everyone talks about peaking at the right time. They're peaking at the right time. Michigan State's peaking at the right time. Those are two good popular
picks. Yeah, I think they're both four seeds, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what makes both of those four seeds so dangerous.
What do you think when, you know, the committee's going over, okay, we're going to place the one seeds here and then the two seeds, and then you get to a great teams like Michigan State and Louisville, and you drop them to a four?
I don't see how both of those teams were picked as four seeds when you have Creighton at the three.
How do they decide that? Do they really? I think they get into too much paper.
Yeah.
Paper statistics and RPI and BMI and strengths of schedule. They don't compare the team, the raw team.
And then you got to look at how well they're playing lately. Like you said, that's probably one of the most important parts of a successful tournament run is you've got to be entering the tournament with some fire. You've got to be winning games going into that tournament. And I don't think they take that into consideration as much as they do the RPI or the BPI, the strength of schedule, stuff like that. That really on paper, it may matter, but in the games, it doesn't matter. As we'll see later in the tournament.
And we got Miles Carrillo in the house. We'll take a quick break. Listen to the Temple of Swan. We'll get back with... Oh, and Haysbert's in the house. We got them both. Thank you, sir. All right, we'll be right back. Listen to Penguin Radio, penguin.edu.
No pride. We've got to stay alive. We're gonna chase those crazy. Tattoo, tattoo. Swap meat salad, trim stamp cat, mouse wife to mom shell in the time it took to get that new tattoo. Tattoo, tattoo. Show you me. Swap meat salad, shrimp stamp chat, mouse wife to mom shell in the time it took to get that new tattoo. Tattoo, tattoo.
All right, we are back here with Connor Haysbert and Miles Carrillo on the Temple of Swan. Thanks for joining us, fellas.
No problem.
Thanks for having us.
All right, so starting it off, what are you guys planning on doing after
your career?
I'm
right
we'll start.
What's the plan?
That's what I want to know. What's the plan first? But yeah, we'll get into the season two right after this.
I honestly haven't had time to think about it since the season ended.
So. All right, let's go into the season.
You don't let him start off the question.
He's the interviewer.
Forget basketball. Forget the season. What are you doing now?
What is your life going to be like after college? No, that's just crazy. You want to get into the season? 22-8 for you guys. A great season by all stretch of the mean. One game short of the NCAA tournament. What were your feelings in that conference championship game when Chaminade was casting all those threes? I want to hear from you first, Haysbert, because I was watching the game on the little live stream they had. Mm-hmm. They just couldn't miss from three, and I think that was just really just a bad luck of the draw.
Yeah, and the guy hitting most of the threes was probably their third or fourth option off the bench, and a guy who was only averaging, I think, like 5 points a game at that time. So it was kind of – and I was in foul trouble, so I was kind of watching from the bench, and it's just kind of a helpless feeling. I guess you're kind of like, well, what are you going to do? He's hitting everything. We definitely didn't help. We gave him some wide open looks towards the beginning, but kind of let him get in a rhythm. But towards the end, his last probably five makes, they're just some crazy fadeaway, every bounce he could have gotten. So it's tough, but you kind of tip your hat off to him. He decided to have the game of his life against us.
Yeah, so. At the right time for them. How about you, Korea? What were your feelings? I know probably the same as Haysbert, but.
Yeah. But a little bit less on the helpless feeling because I was in the game, not with foul trouble, fortunately, but still kind of the same feeling when you watch a guy that's not projected to be, you know, their top scorer or, you know, second or third option. But for him to have such a big night is deflating, you know, to go all that way, kind of have it derailed by some freak occurrence. But I'm not going to take anything away from them. It was a good game. They're a great team, so. Next year, best of luck to the guys coming back on Dominican. Mm-hmm. Hopefully they get them back.
After you guys lost that game, did you think you guys did enough to get into the tournament?
If you compared our resume to Dixie State's, I believe that we did do enough. But according to the selection committee or whatever process it goes through, it didn't look that way.
Yeah, we kind of knew going into the game that just because the fact that Chaminade had made the championship and they weren't ranked in the region, that we were probably going to have to win that. And the Cal State Stanislaus also was behind us in the rankings, and they won their tournament. So we kind of realized, well, we kind of got to win the tournament now. Otherwise, Chaminade's going to take that bid. So kind of everything bad that we needed not to happen happened, which kind of knocked us out. So there was a situation where that first win would have put us in if some other teams would have lost, but it just didn't work out.
Yeah,
that
we
way.
Actually thought with a couple weeks left in the season, like if we win these next two games, I think we're clinching a tournament spot. And then we'd win another game, be like, no, if we win this one, I think we've solidified our spot. But it really never ended up going that way. We had to win our whole conference tournament to get in, which is something we didn't see.
Well, it ended up that 11 wins in a row couldn't even do it. So, you know, sometimes it just isn't in the cards. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, and we thought that win against Dixie State on the home court when you guys just slaughtered them, it wasn't even close. I thought that one was going to be the clincher. And then you guys continue to win, like you said, and it just looked like every other win was just icing on the cake. And then you get to that last game, and it really does suck that you have to win your conference tournament when you go 22-8 and you can't get a bid. So I feel for you guys there. But both you guys being seniors, what was your feelings about this season? I know you guys did great record-wise, but what was your feelings just with the team chemistry, kind of just on the court or off the court? How did you guys feel?
Compared to recent years, this was definitely far and away the best team camaraderie I've been a part of. I think from, you know, me and Connor being here for so long and establishing relationships with the coaches and other upperclassmen such as like Dominique and Devin, you know, we established a good core to build around. And a bunch of guys that came in this year were, you know, teammates that you could get along with and that were willing to work hard and, you know, be a great teammate in all facets of the game. And that really helped us, you know, establish some chemistry on and off the floor. And that kind of translated into such a great record.
Yeah, it's just, like you said, a great group of guys. And we've been here for 4 years, so we've seen a lot of guys come and go, skilled with not great personalities or great personalities that weren't really skilled, but I think we had a really good group, especially a lot of the younger guys, Josh Ramirez, Josh Armstrong, a lot of the younger guys started to become big players towards the end, Carl Orner. They all got in there and really got some experience and played well for us, so that's good for the program as a whole in the future. And just compared to past years, which I'm sure you guys have heard about the struggles we had, this year we just had I think it was a big deal just having the same coaching staff for 3 years in a row, because it's just tough when you get new coaching staff. They have to bring in their new system and a new culture to the program. So you kind of, this was our third year under Coach Harris and Coach Mendoza, and we kind of knew what we needed to do, and we were able to execute our game plan game in and game out, and didn't finish but had a good season.
And we saw Ramirez and Armstrong really grow up, mm-hmm. especially towards the end of the season when Golson got hurt. But what was probably, I don't know, few top favorite memories you had this season, individually or team-wise?
I think our team ones would be the same, but individually for me, I think our road win at Dixie State really kind of changed our outlook on the whole season. You know, we thought coming in, we really weren't sure how we were going to be this year, and then, you know, throughout the season after the good start, we're like, all right, we're a decent team. Like, we've beat some average opponents, and we got a pretty good record. But after our losing streak, it took us a while to find our rhythm again, and I think Dixie State on the road was, I think, our sixth or seventh win in a row after losing four in a row. So that was a great win. I think that was Dixie's only home loss of the season, and a place that in my previous years at Dominican we've gotten blown out. So it was really great to, you know, finish my career with a win there. And then another great game personally would probably be the semifinal game of the tournament. I personally had a decent game, and it was just a fun win to be part of, you know, the PacWest Conference Tournament and actually, you know, get a win, because last year we went one and done.
You didn't even mention your buzzer beaters.
That's what I'm saying.
I thought that would be first on the list. I remember this guy called a great buzzer beater. And you, that was cool. Excited. That was decent.
I was counting down my top five moments. I was about to go
number okay. five and four.
All right. Yeah, I was just wondering where that was coming out.
The first buzzer beater wasn't that eventful because there was no home crowd, you know, celebrating and cheering. When I made it, it was just kind of quiet. And it was just a floater, so
Sonoma, right?
It was not some step back prayer like the second one at home.
It was in their house, though.
Better. Yeah,
that's a little bit more fun. That was
silence
against
the crowd.
Sonoma at Sonoma for the dub.
He's not like, to me though. Maybe no? To you. Maybe you like that road win one better. But
how about you, Haysbert? What were your
mine personally? Well, Miles doesn't address the amazing Azusa shot with the great call. But
that was a good call.
I had a big game at Point Loma. That was a fun game. Did well there. And then I think the game probably maybe of my career was the Dixie game at home, where I had 29. I wanted that 30 piece, but I'll take 29. But I think a big deal was Miles was just finding me. Miles was driving and they were losing me underneath, and I was just getting dunks and ones, and it just felt like no one could stop me at that point, so that was fun. But but beating Dixie's always fun, especially after just being destroyed by them.
You guys were lights out that game.
Oh yeah. And then the at Dixie win I think might also be one of the top wins of my career, because that's the first time we've ever beat Dixie at Dixie. And
what was the crowd like there? I wanted to ask you guys that separately.
Is it loud?
Oh,
because I saw it was like 3,000.
I think and how, it was like 3,500 people there. And
they were pretty quiet most of the game, because we had a lead, I think, from the very beginning. And then once they finally started making their run, there was a moment where like, wow, this place is getting really loud.
Yeah, there's that one point. I think we were up like 16 or something. They made a little run in it. There's about 2 minutes of the game where you couldn't hear much of anything going on in the court. So, they have a football team there, so those guys were talking. But I start talking to them a little bit towards the end.
Yeah, we've seen you on the court. You like to get a little chippy with the guys, and that's always.
Hey, I want
to
know.
That's always welcomed.
What are you guys saying to each other out there?
To
the other players,
to the other team.
Yeah,
because it looks.
Is it real? Is it? Can you know? You probably can't say it on the mic, but is it? Decent trash talk.
Well, sometimes it depends. You kind of can see what bug a guy. Sometimes you say stuff that's pretty bad. Can't say on the radio. Sometimes you just say stuff like, just mess with. I know Johnny Bates likes to just mess with people. Like, there's one guy on Academy Art, and he just walked up to him and said, dude, you're ugly. Like, you're hella ugly.
Seems like Johnny. I don't know him. Just, like,
and then Ziegenhagen is a German guy on HPU. Yeah, and he was, one time I remember he was trying to talk to someone on the free throw line, and Johnny's just like, looks at him and goes, I can't understand a word you're saying, bro. And like, just little stuff like that. But then, yeah. Miles, do you talk to people?
Is Sir John out there?
No. For me, it's more pleasantries. I exchange with the other point guards when people are shooting free throws.
I kind of word.
Yeah, I kind of just get the inside scoop on, you know, little funny things that the other team has going on. But sometimes the other point guards don't want to talk to me. That's when it gets weird.
That's exactly opposite from Haysbert.
Yeah, he always gets a rise out of his opponents. I kind of just put him to sleep.
All right.
Out of the top of the key during free throw lines, just having little conversations.
Yes. You never see me?
How you doing today? Good. What did you guys have for pregame meal?
No.
We go to Miller's too.
That's funny.
Nah, just nice comments.
And then I'm talking, you guys had real, real solid chemistry. This is my first year seeing you guys play. Compared to last year, was it like that? Because you talked about Miles finding you all the time. You have like eyes in the back of your head, it seemed like, this season, finding shooters on the wing, Hayes were down low.
Yeah, Miles is, I think that's also something, we've been together. We're the only guys who've been together here for 4 years. So it's something definitely an on and off the court kind of thing that we've gotten going. But we've had chemistry in the past, but in the past, usually our team, I don't know if Miles would agree, kind of would be split into two or maybe even three at times, like kind of really clicky, and then would kind of come through on the court. This year we kind of all hang out together off the court, and we're a really solid bunch. So yeah, that chemistry thing really comes into play. As much as people try to say, oh, off the court's different, on the court, when you all get along off the court,
that's where it's made, yeah, right there in brotherhood.
Yeah, you're going to be able to play together well on the court, so, and cheer for each other, and that's a big part, too.
Yeah,
so.
It definitely showed.
Yeah, I think we definitely shared the ball better this year than any other year in Dominican history. I think we led the conference in team assists, or were at the top, and, you know, that directly shows that we all trust each other on the floor, and that's a big part of basketball, is trusting to make that extra pass to, you know, that leads to another pass, then someone has a wide-open look, so... You know, that was great to see this year.
Something stemming off chemistry that I want to address here for the listeners who may not have seen it. Midnight Mayhem, you guys did an amazing skit and a dance thing. I want to know who came up with, was that a team collaborative, or who was the one real mind of inspiration for that performance? It was something to see.
Yeah,
dancing to Miley Cyrus, for you listeners didn't know. They went all out. They won the competition. I want to know who was the thinking mind behind that.
I think me and you kind of collaborated on that, right? Kind of.
Yeah.
Miles came up with a few of the things. I came up with a few things. I think, yeah, Miles had the Robin Thicke idea, though, right?
Yeah, I had all the funny stuff.
Yeah, all the funny stuff.
Yeah, it was definitely a team effort. It was me and Connor. That's kind of how it's been all year, just kind of organizing events and telling everybody what they should be doing.
Whose idea was it to make Keith Miley Cyrus?
Yeah, he was.
I think
perfect.
He volunteered.
That's the perfect role there.
He said, I think that's why he redshirted this year, just to do the Miley.
Just to be Miley for Midnight.
He had to focus on that.
That's pretty. He put in lots of work for it.
Yeah. I just wanted to make sure I addressed that.
Oh my!
He might make a return appearance next Midnight.
You never know. Okay. Miley might come back out.
There you go. Don't give away any of your guys' secrets. So you guys won't be here, so it doesn't matter too much. But
we'll probably have to coordinate it, though.
Well, yeah, we'll have to come back.
Be in charge.
Be guest choreographers.
Directing it. Yeah. Okay. So now, kind of looking towards next season, as you guys were the senior leaders, who do you think steps up as in that captain role, or the leaders on and off the court that takes your place?
I think they're gonna need a recruit.
Okay, just tell it honest.
No, I think Dominique and Matt Hayes will probably take over the reins in terms of captains, and they're definitely the two next most vocal people on our team outside of me and Connor, and I think our team will be fine with them.
Yeah, they'll be good. I think they'll be kind of glad that I'm out of their hair. People kind of,
yeah,
I
everyone
tend to
will be.
Everyone hates me in practice. I'm always on everyone, but they know it's out of love, but it'll be, yeah, Dominique will be, I think they might have one more senior coming in, but Dominique will be one of the only seniors, and he'll definitely be able to lead, and Matt's a good leader. He leads really well by example and works hard and stuff, so they're in good hands. So
that's not easy to be a leader on the court. What does that take when, from the very first start of the season to where you guys grew up and came to be a great team at 22-8, like Mike said, what does that take to be a leader, vocally on and off the court?
I think you just probably accept that experience role? Mostly. And for my position, I have to be vocal and be a leader, whether it means, you know, through my actions on and off the floor or through, you know, just telling people what to do. That's just my job, really. Connor kind of does the same, though, even though he plays center.
Well, yeah. For me, it was kind of towards the beginning of the year, always you got to be willing to take criticism from everybody, and then you got to be willing to give criticism even if people aren't going to be really excited to hear it. Miles would agree with me. He hated me during practice a lot of the time, and everyone else did, and would get pissed because I would yell and stuff. But I just kind of took that as my role. Of course, I'm going to mess up too, and that's kind of gets on people's nerves when you're messing up and you're yelling at people. But someone's got to be on you, and so as a leader, you can't always worry about being the most popular person on the team, I guess. Both on and off the court, you got to kind of make sure everyone's doing what they're supposed to be doing. But at the end of the day, it's fun, and we're all brothers, and everyone loves me when I'm just chilling and not trying to get
not in the court mode.
Yeah.
So going towards, you guys have, what is it, 4 or 5 weeks left in your senior year. Mm-hmm. What are your guys' feelings going towards graduation now that you're so close? Done with basketball, just focused on graduating now. What are your guys' feelings towards that?
I'd probably say a little bit of relief. It's definitely a grind being a student athlete, especially basketball. We practiced every
day. Yeah, what time
do
you guys practice?
6 a.m. usually, Monday through Friday.
6 a.m.?
Yeah, towards the end of the season they kind of let up, but it's definitely a rough 6-month stretch just getting up and working every day, and whether you want to or not, you have to do it. So now it's nice to sleep in and kind of, you know, just focus on school and what you're going to do after college. So I'm sure Connor enjoys that part of it too.
Yeah, it's nice getting a break. We've been doing this for, what, 15 years of our life. So yeah. It's also kind of weird just not having it. And I don't think it's fully hit us yet that we won't be playing organized basketball probably for the rest of our lives. But it's definitely kind of a new chapter in your life. You know what I mean? I've been doing this for so long that now it'll be nice to focus, just finish this year off, and then hopefully for me getting to med school, and it'll be nice just to focus on school and just play basketball purely for fun, you know. So, yeah.
How was it playing for Coach Harris for 3 years?
Like him? It was an adventure, I'd say, for sure.
That's a good way to put it.
I mean, I like Coach Harris as a coach. He definitely brought in a new mindset and instilled that in all of his players, and we showed that this year. From sophomore year to junior year, we improved. From my junior year to this year, we improved. And I think it's just the approach that he takes. He's really stern with his players. He forces execution, and he forces people to know their roles, or, you know, they won't be playing. And I think that's important for a coach to have those characteristics.
Yeah, I think a big part of what Coach Harris has done is just changed the mentality of the basketball program, kind of, especially for Miles and me, freshman year, it's kind of like we won 4 games last year. It's like you're in a losing state of mind. Like, no matter how much, no one likes to lose, and the guys on the team don't even understand. Like, when we talk to them, like we were used to losing. Like, it's what you did. Like, if we won, you were excited. This year it was different. This year we were used to winning. If we lost, it sucked. So, just completely, it's easier said than done to really change the mentality of a whole team and a whole program like that. So, but he did a great job of doing that. And then Coach Mendoza, our assistant coach, is awesome too, and he does a real good job of working with everybody. And yeah, they're doing a great job of turning the program around, and hopefully they just keep going up from here.
Do you guys have any inside information on recruits that may be coming in, or guys who potentially could help the program out? Or just because I want to know, just from a fan standpoint, if you could give that kind of information away.
Yeah, no, I think they have pretty sure Bobby's coming. I don't know if you've seen him around.
I know for sure there's the emphasis is on bigs.
Yeah.
I was going to say, who's going to replace you?
Yeah, that's
is
what
it's going to be.
Well, Bobby, I'm sure you guys have seen him at the game. Tall, light-skinned guy, has the tattoos.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he'll be here next year most likely. And then I think they signed I don't know what his name is, but how big was the guy? 6'10", 300?
He's kind of built like Jake Noizat from last year.
Big old dude. he used to college football. Didn't he used to play college? I don't know. I don't know the story behind but
their emphasis is on the bigs.
Yeah, he's coming in. He'll be a senior, and then I'm sure they're doing some guard recruiting. But, yeah, they're trying to get some bigs in there. It would have been nice to have one this year. But, yeah, getting bigs in there definitely now that I'm gone, because I'm not even a true big.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You're forced into that role with the player. Yeah. Well, I want to – who else – now we talked about the bigs maybe being an emphasis in recruiting. Who do you think steps up for Miles at the point guard spot? Now we saw Taplin. He's more of an off guard just from a fan standpoint. And then you have maybe Armstrong, who's a freshman, so – didn't look like he was ready to take over the reins just yet. Do you think it's going to be him next in line at the point guard?
That's what it's looking right now. I'm sure they're going to be doing some type of recruiting, might be trying to get a transfer guard, just a little bit older. But right now, Josh did a good job. A lot. He improved bounds and lengths from the beginning of the season.
Yeah, we saw that too.
Yeah, and if he puts in enough work over the summer, he can come in and be a really good point guard for us. Dominique plays good point guard, but he's better at the two. Shooting and driving and stuff. So if they're able to put him at the two, and Josh works on his game and is able to play the one strongly, then
that's
they're set up well.
Scenario.
Yeah.
Do you have any input on that as being a former guard?
Your successor.
Who's going to take that role from you?
I think Josh for sure has the ability to do it. I think he'd definitely be the next in line just since he knows the system. And the end of the year kind of shows that he knows that he can play at that level, and the coaches have been able to see that he's capable of doing that. So I'm sure they'll probably look for some sort of transfer guard in to come in and at least support him, because if Josh was the point guard, then there'd be no backup really. So I'm sure they'll get either someone to play alongside him or back him up. But yeah, point guard is definitely an important position, so I'm sure they'll focus on that in recruiting.
Was he really looking up to you as he was playing behind you? Is kind of your mentor almost, or
I don't know. You'd have to ask him that. But
get to bring him.
I'd hope so, because when I was a freshman, I definitely looked up to Xander McNally and tried to play more like he did, just because he was so successful here. And I think anytime you play behind someone, you have to take that learning mindset, or else it you won't get better, and then you won't end up playing that position one day.
Just a question, since we're talking about recruiting, how'd you guys get recruited here? Coach Harris didn't recruit you here, but how'd you guys end up coming to Dominican and staying here for 4 years and playing ball?
Yeah, during my senior year, I was being recruited by Dominican. Actually, my AAU coach was like, I just got a call from Dominican, and I was like Republic?
Like who's Dominican? Yeah,
I'm gonna go play college. Yeah, so and then I came on a couple unofficial visits, visited the campus. I loved the area, and the guys were cool. And, yeah, that was back when we had the old coaching staff was here. And, it was between really going JUCO near home in Sacramento or Dominican, or Chico State actually offered me a tuition scholarship. So it was kind of back and forth, and I decided Chico wanted me to redshirt, and I wasn't really – wanting to redshirt. I'm kind of an academic guy too, so I wanted to get in and get out, and Dominican said I could get done in 4 years, so that kind of persuaded me, and I'm glad I made the decision. Yeah, I'm glad I'm here.
I kind of took the same route in terms of not really knowing what Dominican was when I first heard about it, but the more I looked into it, it's a good school, and at the time I was looking to do occupational therapy, so they had my major, and then the coach seemed like he wanted me, and everything looked like it'd be a go. And I love the environment. I love San Rafael. I love San Francisco. I think it's just like my hometown. I'm from Southern California in Orange County, so it wasn't much of a change climate-wise, and it all worked out. I think I wasn't expecting our head coach to be fired after our freshman year, but
yeah, that was.
Things worked out. I thought about transferring after my freshman year to Humboldt State, and Sonoma State was a phone call away from ending up at Humboldt State, which is another story, but ended up staying here, playing with Coach Harris and staying with Connor and finishing it the right way, I think.
Yeah, he tried to leave me.
Harris tried to convince you guys to stay?
A little bit. Yeah, he'd never seen us play, though, so it's kind of hard in his position. He doesn't really... He can't act like he wants us here super bad if he doesn't even know really what kind of impact we'd have. And he was out busy trying to get a team. At that point, we only had four players, so he had to sign about 14, 15 guys.
Yeah, Yeah, so. me, Miles, and yeah, and like Xander, two other guys,
Xander and Mark.
Yeah, were like the only people who didn't leave after our coaches were fired. So, and that's just something, especially as a freshman. I don't know, my coaches didn't. Coach can't get fired in high school, so you just don't know how to handle it and stuff. So a lot of guys left, and it's kind of just, and we didn't have a coach for like 2 months or something, so it's just kind of like we didn't know what was going on. So it all worked out. So yeah, Coach Harris came in I think a couple weeks before school ended, met with him, and rest history.
There you go. And it worked out to a 22-8 record your senior year. Very good showing. Now going back to you, Connor, you said that you're applying to med schools. What schools are you applying to just for after the senior year and graduation, just to get inside your academic life?
Yeah, I'm still doing some research on all the schools I'll be applying to. The application comes out in May, so I'm still got a little bit of time, but I got to get cracking on that. But my number one school is Davis. It's close to home. Definitely a few of the California schools down in SoCal and stuff. It'd be nice to stay in California, but it's just really competitive out here.
Yeah.
And so I'm doing some research all over the country, just seeing schools that I want to be an orthopedic surgeon. At least do something in sports medicine. So schools that kind of have good results for people trying to follow that field. East Coast, Midwest, all over the place. So, yeah, we'll see. Hopefully I can stay close, but I'm not opposed to moving around. Yeah. It'll be cool, a nice experience if I get to go somewhere else in the country. So, yeah.
Well, I'm just from my own experience, from knowing you for 1 year, I'm pretty sure you'll be successful in whatever you do.
Thank you.
Just, you got time to apply, so take your time, make a good decision like you did. Come in here. Now, Miles, Alex asked you the question of what you're going to do after graduation too quick, now that you've warmed up a little bit maybe. What are you looking towards in the summer, or going into the real world is what they call it nowadays? What's some options for you?
Right now, I don't really know exactly which direction I want to go. I have some options. I mean, right now I'm doing an internship with a good friend of mine who's an entrepreneur and just invented a new gardening product. So I'm doing some marketing for him, some sales calls, customer delivery stuff. And you never know, I might end up working with him long term, or maybe it's just an internship and then I go another direction. But it's just a start. I don't really have a specific thing I want to do after college, which is nice. I'm flexible, and maybe I see myself coaching basketball in the future, or going a completely different direction.
So you're going pre-med. Are you, you're not doing occupational therapy, you're going business?
I'm business marketing.
Okay. Miles is the man of a million majors. I think he's had like six majors while he's been in college, right?
Yeah.
Comm, biology, OT, and business, right?
Yeah.
Okay, he's done it all. He's
finally found one that fits.
Trying them all out.
There you go.
But going through all that schoolwork on top of getting up for 6 a.m. practice, is there a time where you just think you're just mentally drained? You just need a day off.
It's probably every day for them.
Time.
Yeah.
All the time.
So how do you get through that? Just mental toughness?
We just say we can't wait till today's date.
Yeah. we looked forward to right now. I'm telling you. That's pretty much. Me and Miles did a lot of, I can't wait till this is over. Can't wait till this is over, which is definitely a big relief being done. Of course, we miss it already, but yeah, it's rough. It's not easy. And but that's what. Yeah, success isn't easy. So looking back at it, it was all worth it, the great season we had. I'm not saying I liked it or would do it again, but but I'd rather practice at 1 in the morning, not 6 a.m., and then do well. But it was worth it.
1 in the morning? Really?
I meant 1 in the afternoon.
I was like, that's kind of the same thing.
Maybe 1 in the morning might even be better.
That late night practice?
Yeah, if you're a night owl, there you go. That might work.
Yeah.
And also, how do you keep yourself healthy while – playing so many games, playing 30 games throughout the season?
I personally take daily vitamins. That's probably my answer.
That's a secret right there.
You have an ice bath?
A lot of sleep. I didn't really take many ice baths. I just, tried to heal naturally.
I can't handle the ice baths, man. I had to take a couple during the end of the year just because it's a grind towards the end of the year. We can ask Chris Schwartz what to do to not stay healthy.
Yeah, Chris Schwartz is always sick. He would be out a week and a half at a time with a cold.
We had to quarantine him all the time.
Oh, man.
He got the worst colds.
Yeah.
The worst cold. The death, I didn't know a cold can keep you out a week and a half.
He would almost die. He'd be out of colds.
Oh, man. Jeez.
Chris is in the hospital. What's wrong with me? He has a cold.
That's crazy. Now, going into college basketball, Division I tournament time, as it's just kicked off today, the second round of games. Who are your guys' favorites in the brackets? I know already a couple upsets for both you guys, Ohio State going down, but who you guys got going in the Final Four? Who's your final two teams?
I think this year it's kind of hard to say. There's a lot of parity, so I'd probably say Florida or Wichita State would be my two, you know, favorites, but nobody really knows with Wichita State. They've had, you know, an average schedule, so.
Yeah.
A lot of good teams. Well, I'm a Dukie.
Me too. Oh, I'm a Duke guy.
So I want to see it, but.
It doesn't happen very often. I pick them to go, and it doesn't happen.
And this year, filling out my bracket, like, I want to make them go all the way, but it's just like, I don't see it. I don't see it happening. But if it happens, I will be excited. But go Duke. But I think Florida, actually, watching Florida today, if they keep playing like that, they'll be done next round. But
they were struggling with the 16 seed.
Yeah, so we'll see. It's a lot of good teams. I think it's just all the teams are getting better. It's more equality when it comes to seeding is almost not even a factor when it comes, like, I think there's more lower seeds won today than higher seeds or something like that. But
yeah, it's
at least
close.
When we were watching, but it's, yeah, it's good players, good teams out there.
Do you guys watch a lot of D1 ball while you're playing throughout the season?
Or
when you can?
Yeah, I'd say I do. Probably above average. But I definitely love watching the tournament no matter what. Hell yeah. So I always tune in for March Madness.
I probably watch more college basketball than NBA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. NBA playoffs are great.
Yeah, I watch NBA playoffs.
Throughout the
sure.
season, though, college basketball, and then you got the tourney. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
Just for an update for you guys, because you can't see my computer, St. Joe's lost to UConn in overtime, so I think you guys are happy about that one.
No.
Right? No?
I had St. Joe's.
No.
Okay. I had St. Joe's.
My mom is happy. My mom is pumped. She's like, 8 for 9.
Dang. That's a good start.
Near perfect.
It's not $1 billion, though.
No, it's not.
I don't think anyone's gonna win that perfect bracket.
I wonder. We have to look if everyone still has one. I'm sure.
Because I know
maybe
it was down
two people in the nation.
I know it was down to like 3% before the St. Joe's UConn game.
It was down to 20% after the first game.
Yeah. So exactly, it just weeded it out really quickly. And then NC State's up by 1 to the Billikens right now with 28 seconds left.
I had them losing too.
Yeah, St. Louis losing or NC State?
I had NC State losing.
Oh.
See, I had NC State and I changed it.
I can't do it.
I always do that. I change it last second, and then it always comes back to bite me.
Can't change it.
Yeah. It's just luck, let's be honest.
When does SF Austin play?
Are they tomorrow? Against the VCU?
Anyone listening to this right now, SF Austin is going to the Sweet 16. I'm telling you right now. They're like 31-2.
Yeah,
they know how to win. They're going. Okay. Yeah, they won 28 in a row. Come on.
I think VCU's flawed, too. I think VCU's
flawed.
That's what I'm
saying.
Last year, they caught people by surprise because of that press, but I think people know now.
I believe in SF Austin.
Yeah.
Okay. There we go. I got them winning the first round, but I don't know about the whole Sweet 16.
Yeah, I think they had them upsetting UCLA.
Because then it's UCLA next,
yeah. That's wishful thinking.
You never know. They could get the Bruins. But
they could get the Bruins easy.
I think the thing about it is every team is so inconsistent.
SF Austin.
It's SF
31-2.
31-2, 28-game win streak.
What's VCU's record? What's UCLA's record?
I don't know. UCLA's, I think, at 11 or 12 losses. So
yeah,
it's just every team's so inconsistent.
You can't lose that many games in the Pac-12, dude.
Pac-12 has a lot of teams this year,
good this year.
They have like six teams in the tournament.
They've turned it around.
From last year,
they have turned it around.
But they did win the conference tournament, UCLA did, over Arizona. That's the one thing that swayed my decision.
I don't know if I'm sold on Zona.
Oh, on Arizona. Ever since Ashley went down, it changed.
Yeah, they're big. They have experienced guys. Nick Johnson is pretty good. I played against him in high school.
Oh, you played against him?
Yeah. So
what high school did he play at?
AAU. He played at, I don't know if you guys ever heard of Findlay Prep. It was like this crazy, like, in Nevada kind of.
The basketball
school.
Yeah.
It was like a basketball school.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, I played against him in AAU, and he has crazy bounce. He's a freak. So, but he doesn't really do that in college, which is crazy. But no,
yeah,
he's
his
good.
Teammate, Gabe York, went to high school right down by my house. So I played against him. But he's not as good as Nick Johnson, I don't think.
Nick Johnson's crazy.
Yeah.
Who's your guys' favorite NBA player, if you had to pick, living or dead or not playing right now?
Probably Kobe, who's dead and not dead.
Who's all of the above?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're a Laker fan then, I take it?
Yeah, I've been a Laker fan for a long time.
How's this year going for you?
The past few years, I've started to watch the Warriors more just because the Lakers
feel, man?
Haven't
How's
done
it
anything.
Feel? Sacramento Kings are better than the LA Lakers right now.
I don't know. I think they're holding down the cellar in the West together. But they're going to turn it around next year. They'll get some big names, I have faith.
They're going to get Kevin Love. They're going to get everyone.
They will. They'll revamp next year. And it'll be like, this never happened.
Yeah. So I'm enjoying it right now. Enjoying the Lakers' struggles.
I love watching
I'll actually watch the NBA draft lottery, which is going to be exciting.
When's the last time you watched that as a Laker
fan? I've never watched the lottery before.
You're going to pay attention to that one.
I watch that every year.
I know. Kings have
top
struggle.
Six every year. It's fantastic.
Oh, you're a Kings fan like Alex.
And then
there
we
you go.
Pick some crazy person that no one's ever heard of.
I can't believe
before.
We took Fredette, man. Back.
You're still paying for that, Chase.
No, Fredette, we picked Jason Thompson from Ryder. Yeah. Did you watch that draft?
No, I don't watch the draft.
Jason Thompson from Ryder. From where? It's just Kings.
I saw him in the conference tournament, but that was the only time I saw Thompson play.
Crazy.
And it's the Kings for you, though.
Who's your favorite player?
The Leafs ran us into the ground.
That's tough, man.
It is a tough question. I'm
currently
sorry.
Playing LeBron.
Yeah, LeBron.
Of all time, it's close between MJ and I don't think Miles even knows this. Bill Russell. I love Bill Russell.
Okay.
He wins.
Do you watch him a lot?
I watched him all the time. He's a wee lad.
On recorded TV.
On VHS tapes. Yeah.
What are your feelings on Jason Kidd, Carrillo, since he's a I resemble your game to his. I hope you don't take offense to that, but he's a facilitator, can shoot the three.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if Jason Kidd is as talented as me. But
that's a good point.
He might be a better coach. I'm not sure. Yeah, I think Jason Kidd's game is similar to mine.
Okay.
He might be a little more athletic. But
just a little bit.
But yeah, that's a good comparison.
Okay. I just wanted to throw that out there because that's what I thought when I was watching the games. I was like, he reminds me of Jason Kidd. I was hoping you wouldn't be offended by that comment.
No, thank you.
Okay. Nice. I'm still working on one for you, Hazer. See, I didn't pay attention to the big guys.
No,
I was more
really
of a point guard watcher.
What am I? What do I do?
You're like a D-back.
A Vladdy D-back. Okay.
He got some mean to him.
That nice little mid-range.
Little mid-range. Just
yells a lot.
Tim Duncan a little bit.
Yeah, Timmy.
Oh, Timmy.
He kind of looked like Timmy, too.
Tim Duncan's too good.
Yeah, maybe Tim Duncan.
He's nice, though. He's like 7 feet tall. He's humongous.
Is he? Oh, wow.
He's a 7-footer, bro.
Yeah.
He's and he's like 80.
Glass. He's like 80, but playing like he's
I know, he's
25.
He's got the fountain of youth.
They're all old.
Yeah, that Spurs team.
How does Pop do it?
I don't know. He's old. He has to be like 90. He's coaching there for like 50
Pop
years.
Dies on the sideline.
That's not nice. Pop.
Breaking news. Dang. Popovich, Tim happened? Duncan. Manu Ginobili, all of
and
them.
And then Tony Parker.
Out.
Yeah.
Tony Parker, everybody.
God, how does that happen? Well, we want to thank you guys for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, fellas.
No problem. Thanks for having us.
Speak to you guys.
Appreciate it. It was great.
Yeah, you guys had a great season. Just wanted to commend you on that. And best of luck to your guys' future endeavors and whatever you guys decide to do. And thanks for coming on. This is the Temple of Swan. We'll be back next week, Thursday at 5. Thanks for joining.